Editor's note. This story includes references to and descriptions of knife wounds suffered by the victim. The pathologist who conducted the post-mortem exam on murder victim Renee Sweeney testified today, March 2, in the second-degree murder trial of Robert Stephen Wright. It was a deeply emotional day, one punctuated with tears as the jury and the Sweeney family viewed the detailed photos of the 27 stab wounds and cuts onto the young woman's face and body. At one point during this testimony, Kim Sweeney, sister to the victim, was overcome by emotion. The courtroom then emptied for the morning break, including the judge and jury. As Kim Sweeney was escorted out through the jury exit, she crossed directly in front of Wright. She looked him in the eye and spoke a few words before being ushered out by her loved ones. She returned to the courtroom several minutes after court resumed. Renee Sweeney was a Laurentian University student when she was murdered in 1998, majoring in music and working at the adults-only video in a plaza at 1500 Paris Saint, the site of her murder. Wright was an 18-year-old high school student in 1998 who lived at home with his parents in Val-Caron, but attended a high school a short walk from the plaza at 1500 Paris Street, asterisk. Now 43, Wright was arrested in December, 2018, for the January 27, 1998, murder. Day 6 of the trial heard testimony from Dr. Kelly Oren, who flew from his home in Nova Scotia to testify. In 1998, Oren was a pathologist at the North Bay Hospital. He testified that Sudbury did not have the facility at the time, though it was set up soon after. Oren completed the post-mortem examination of Sweeney's body on January 28, 1998. As Crown Attorney Rob Parsons went through Oren's original report, he also took the jury and the witness through 40 photos of Sweeney's injuries. Parsons and defense co-counsel Michael Lacey said the photos had been vetted and redacted, where possible as they were sensitive images. However, many people in the courtroom found the images difficult to view. Many in the courtroom shifted in their seats as the photos appeared on several large screens. Several jury members appeared to glance at the photos briefly, before returning to the paper copy of the written pathology report they had been given to aid in understanding Oren's testimony. Parsons began questioning by confirming procedural details, how the report was written, who was present for the examination. These people included another doctor, a student, and two Sudbury Regional Police officers, Leo Thibault, who testified March 1, and Rick Waugh, who is on the witness list but has yet to testify. The photos showed some post-mortem lividity, the gravitational settling of blood in vessels after circulation has ceased, and some bruising that Oren said could have happened hours or a day before the murder. Several wounds were described as superficial, including some scratches. They were described as superficial as they were not particularly deep, did not hit vital structures, and, in and of themselves, were not life-threatening, Oren testified. Each wound was labeled W, wound, and then a number, but not the order the wounds were inflicted, the order they were processed by the coroner. It was W10 that was the fatal wound. Oren described it as a large wound at the base of the right side of Sweeney's neck. It appeared to be a complex of at least four wounds, said Oren. This wound was deep enough that vascular structures were injured and the right sternocleidomastoid muscle severed. The sternocleidomastoid muscle is the main muscle for turning a person's head, Oren testified. It attaches at the base of the skull to the collarbone. On cross-examination, Lacey asked if this meant that Sweeney could not turn her head to the right. It would be extremely difficult if not impossible, replied Oren. A male witness whose name is under a publication ban testified on February 24 that when he told Sweeney he would get help, he thought she moved her head slightly towards her right shoulder. The wound also partially transects, cuts through, the carotid artery, and the extent of those injuries and multiple cuts leads to this being a more significant injury, said Oren. Partially transected means the carotid was not cut completely across, but more than 50%, but less than 100% cut. There are two carotid arteries, Oren testified, on the right and on the left side of the neck. They carry a considerable amount of blood to the brain, he said, and the brain is a hungry organ. Arren noted that though counterintuitive, a partial transection can cause blood loss faster than complete transection, as complete would cause the artery to compress, slowing the bleeding slightly. The knife used to commit the murder also cut Sweeney's jugular vein, both anterior and exterior, and in addition to the defensive wounds on her left hand, a large cut through her palm, in addition to one at the base of her thumb, would have caused a significant and fatal loss of blood. Arren was asked about timing, including how long someone could make conscious, voluntary movements after sustaining this number and severity of injuries. "Probably less than a minute," said Arren. "But these are usually dynamic situations with the deceased probably having increased pulse, pressure, adrenaline, so take that 1 minute with a grain of salt, there could be considerable variation on either side."
5 minutes?
Parsons asked. "I would be very surprised if someone could physically resist at 5 minutes for a wound like that," said Arren, referring to W10. He testified that the carotid artery carries about 450 to 480 milliliters trace of blood in a minute. "And that's a normal, healthy individual at rest in a doctor's office," Arren testified. In 2 minutes, at 450 milliliters, Arren said Sweeney would have lost more than a liter of blood just from the carotid injury, and a person can only withstand 10% of total blood loss, before you go into hypovolemic shock. Parsons asked about the ability to detect pulse. "It's unlikely that she would have a measurable pulse in any form beyond 4 to 5 minutes," Arren testified. "There could be electrical activity in the heart, but a pulse requires a working volume of fluid, and in 4 to 5 minutes there is not enough fluid left. I expect probably less time." When it was his opportunity to question the pathologist, defense co-counsel Lacey asked about the type of weapon and if Arren could draw any conclusions beyond it being an edged weapon. Even with the wound measurements, Arren said he could not, as Sweeney's clothing prevented what he referred to as hilt marks, marks from the handle of the knife that would indicate length of blade or type of knife. Lacey asked how many times Arren had been asked to take a fingernail sample. Arren said it was the first time he had been asked, and additionally, he had not taken fingernail samples during a post-mortem exam since that time. Arren testified he remembered obtaining the fingernail clipping tool, soaking it in bleach for 5 minutes, rinsing it with saline and letting it air dry to avoid fiber or genetic contamination. He also testified he cut the fingernails. Arren's memory regarding who actually clipped Sweeney's nails contrasts with testimony the jury heard from forensic officer Leo Thibault on March 1, who said he remembered clipping the fingernails and seizing them for evidence. "So it would come as a complete surprise to hear that we heard from a witness yesterday who claimed that he clipped and collected the fingernails. That would be a complete shock to you?" asked Lacey. "Actually, no, because I remember the sterilization, but if he collected them." Arren trailed off. "I can't say that I remember doing the actual clipping. I remember holding the hands. Up until about 30 seconds ago, you thought it, but your memory has failed you?" asked Lacey. "Fair enough," Arren replied. "No one is suggesting you were trying to mislead," said Lacey. "The passage of time, memories fade, fair enough." "Fair enough," Arren stated, before being excused. The trial ended early today at 12:30 p.m. The trial continues March 6 at 10 a.m. Jenny Lamothe is a reporter at Sudbury.com. Correction. An earlier version of this story incorrectly stated Robert Stephen Wright lived with his parents within walking distance of the murder scene.